From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! New documents and interviews show that U.S. officials knew that the scale of killings in Rwanda amounted to genocide, but advocated pulling out a U.N. peacekeeping force from the beginning. We'll talk with an investigative reporter who's just completed a three-year investigation involving 60 interviews with State Department, Defense Department, and National Security Council officials. And yes, Senator Jesse Helms has called it quits. He says he will retire at the end of his term as senator from North Carolina. We'll speak with former now President Patricia Ireland and well-known lesbian writer Nav Segrest from North Carolina. All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli soldiers killed seven Palestinians yesterday in an upsurge of violence in the West Bank and Gaza, including an apparent Israeli attempt to kill two top Hamas leaders. Israeli helicopters in Gaza fired missiles at cars carrying the leaders, but they escaped unharmed. Killed in the attack was one of the leaders' 21-year-old sons. Meanwhile, five Palestinians were killed by Israeli gunfire near the West Bank city of Nablus. In Jerusalem, visiting German Foreign Minister Jacques Fischer said Mideast truce talks tentatively set for Berlin must be well prepared and that he was in touch with the United States, Russia, and the European Union on the issue. The talks would be held between Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres and Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. A kibbutz that markets low-grade chemical weapons is poised to sell millions of dollars worth of riot control equipment to Zimbabwe in a move its critics warn will translate into heightened repression by President Robert Mugabe. According to the firm's website, Beit Alpha Trailer Company builds riot control vehicles and specializes in water cannon technology, chemical additives to be used in restraining dangerous inmate situations in correctional facilities, quote, can be injected in the water stream under further officer control to further restrain and demobilize the inmate. The Beit Alpha Trailer Company general manager says the chemical is a food color that aims at having a psychological effect, but the website suggests other chemicals, such as pepper spray, can be injected into the cannon's water stream. Brazil's health minister has moved to strip Roche Pharmaceuticals' patent on the anti-AIDS drug nalfinavir after negotiations failed to lower the price. He said yesterday he would use a clause in Brazil's 1997 intellectual property law that allows patents to be broken in cases of national emergency or when companies employ abusive pricing policies. The move marks the first time Brazil has stripped the patent on an anti-AIDS medication despite previous threats to do so. Brazil, which has the highest number of people with AIDS in Latin America, distributes a cocktail of anti-AIDS drugs free to anyone who needs it. Last year, some 90,000 people received the drugs that would have cost each of them up to $15,000. In 4 years, the number of AIDS deaths in Brazil has fallen from 11,000 to 4,000. More than 200 activist civil rights leaders and celebrities yesterday urged the United Nations to challenge U.S. drug laws in an upcoming U.N. conference on racism, saying they discriminate against African Americans and Latinos. In a petition to U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan, the signatories say the U.S. war on drugs is, quote, not a war on plants and chemicals, but on citizens and other human beings who all too often are members of racial and ethnic minorities. Whites use as many drugs as people of color do, but 80% of those incarcerated are African American or Latino. The petitioners included actor Danny Glover, singer Harry Belafonte, New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson, Julian Bond, chair of the NAACP, and dozens of legislators, church leaders, scholars, and scientists. Federal officials have filed a lawsuit in Iowa that accuses three former supervisors at an egg farm of raping Mexican women who work there and threatened to fire or kill them if they did not submit. The lawsuit filed on Monday by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission says that at least one of the rapes at the Coster Farms occurred at knife point. No criminal charges have been filed against the supervisors. A lawyer for the company said two of the supervisors were fired after being accused of taking bribes from job applicants. The third supervisor left earlier. And two Marine instructors from the Quantico Marine Corps base in Virginia have been charged with raping trainees at a military base in Missouri. After convicted, if convicted of rape, they could be sentenced to life in prison. The two were already facing charges that included sexual harassment and inappropriate sexual relations. A cancer patient who won a $3 billion jury award against the tobacco company Philip Morris has agreed to accept a reduced award of $100 million. Earlier this month, a Los Angeles Superior Court judge upheld the jury's verdict but ruled that the award to the plaintiff, Richard Boken, was excessive. He gave Boken until Friday to accept the lesser amount. Otherwise, the judge says there would be a new trial to reconsider punitive damages. A lawyer for Philip Morris says the company would still appeal the award as excessive. In North Carolina, state legislator apologized for forwarding to fellow lawmakers an email message that said two things made this country great, white men and Christianity. The lawmaker, Representative Donald Davis, a white Republican, said he received the letter on Friday and forwarded it to every member of the State House and Senate. He said he did not consider the letter racist. Before releasing the apology, Davis had said of the email message, quote, "There's a lot of it that's truth, the way I see it. Who came to this country first? The white man, didn't he? That's who made this country great." Every breath you take, the police, here on Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. We went to alternet.org this morning, and they're highlighting a piece announcing retirement. Helms deserves scrutiny, not praise, by Thomas Telly of Spectator magazine. He writes, Jesse Helms has been the source of some of the worst invective spewed in Congress since the abolition of slavery. He remains, even as he approaches his 80th year on Earth, and his 30th year in the U.S. Senate, an unrepentant demagogue, buoyed by decades by playing upon the worst prejudices of his fellow Americans. You wouldn't know this, though, by the majority of media coverage given to Senator Noe's much ballyhooed announcement that he would not seek a sixth term in 2002. Bland summaries of his political career have instead focused on him as an old-school conservative icon or Cold War soldier who never gave up the Reagan-esque face. The coverage has invariably included references to Helms' mounting physical infirmities. He therefore comes across, especially on TV, as very vulnerable, a put-upon old man deserving of sympathy instead of critique. Today on Democracy Now!, we'll take a different approach. We're joined on the telephone by Patricia Ireland, who's the former president of the National Organization for Women, and Mab Segrest, who organized against racism and homophobia in North Carolina for the past 20 years. Her book, Memoirs of a Race Traitor, named an outstanding book on human rights in North America, reflects her experiences organizing against neo-Nazi movements and hate violence. And she served as founding director of North Carolinians Against Racist and Religious Violence for 7 years, currently finishing a book on globalization. Mab Segrest joins us from Benson, North Carolina. Well, can you start off by giving your reaction to Jesse Helms' announcement?
More relief and sadness, I think, than celebration. very glad that this long reign of hate will soon be over, but sad at the devastation that this man has left in his wake.
Can you talk about his record? What stands out for you?
Well, I was reflecting some on it last night, listening to the glowing tributes on the television. And it seems like for the past 30 years, he's really reflected, organized, and articulated the worst in American politics. He was elected to the Senate in 72, but it really goes back much earlier than that. In the 50s, he was instrumental in Will Smith's virulent Senate campaign against Frank Porter Graham and ended up as the senator's staff person in Congress, was there for the McCarthy period, I assume, came home, developed a public reputation with the most racist diatribes on a local television station, got elected to the Senate in opposition to African-American struggles for freedom, anti-communism, very soon added to his quiver the panoply of social issues that the new right was developing in the early 70s, as they rapidly figured that there's only so many people you could get to vote for making rich people richer, and they needed a populist base, so they went to abortion, prayer in the schools, homosexuality. He was a very early warrior in the culture wars. When the 80s came along, he was in strident opposition to liberation movements in Latin America and in support of Darbasan and the most fascist regimes there and all over the world. The IBM Treaty, Boy Scouts, more recently Helms Burton, resurrecting Cold War missile defense systems. I mean, the man has been on the wrong side of more issues than almost anybody else in this country.
Well, what accounts for his support in North Carolina?
Well, I think that one thing that some people don't realize outside of the state is that his margin of support in North Carolina for years has been very narrow. You start off an election, 45% of people hate him, 45% of people are going to love him, and it'll get down to a swing vote of 3 or 4%, and we've never really been able to get that swing vote to swing, and partly because the man is like no holds barred. I mean, he speaks about God and country and family, but he knows you get power any way you can and you keep it any way you can. And the kind of scurrilous tactics he's used over the years have set increasingly new lows for American politics.
We're also joined on the phone by Patricia Ireland, former president of the National Organization for Women, as we talk about the announced retirement of North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms. Patricia Ireland, he is well known for the Helms Amendment that prevented any U.S. international family planning money from funding abortions. Since the U.N. adopted the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women in 1979, Helms has consistently refused to hold hearings on it. The U.S. is the only industrialized country that has yet to ratify this convention. Your response to his career and what his retirement will mean?
Well, I think Mab's covered a lot of it. He had shown an extreme arrogance and an ultra-nationalism in foreign policy. He was, I guess, a refugee from the used-to-be in terms of being a cold warrior. My concern in part is coming out of your newscast and listening to a state legislator today sending an email saying that the two things that made our country great are white men and Christianity, and then jumping from there to say that there is some truth in that, as he alleged that who first came to this country after all were white men, as if the country had been a vacuum until then. My concern in part is that we will end up with a Helms clone in the Senate, only this time the clone will be young and vigorous. At 80, there was a certain limit after he was no longer chair of the Helms of the Foreign Affairs Committee. There was a certain limit to what Helms was able to do or had the energy to do. I was reminded listening yesterday to some of the praise for Helms of Nixon's funeral, where I found myself, as often I do, talking back to the television. It was suddenly as if he had been this paragon of virtue, and it just kind of blew me away.
there's medication for problems like that, talking to television sets. Elizabeth Dole, former presidential candidate, two-time cabinet secretary, has been talked about as a serious consideration for Helms' seat. What do you think of that?
I think it's going to be ironic if we ended up with two women candidates, because Elizabeth Dole is certainly being talked about on the Republican side, and we have Elaine Marshall talked about on the Democratic side. She has won statewide office before, although nationally she's certainly not as well known as Elizabeth Dole. But there's going to be a lot of competition for the nominations. That seat's been tied up for a long time. And on the one hand, we couldn't do worse than Jesse Helms. And on the other hand, I think Elizabeth Dole comes wrapped in a certain saccharine coating that masks some of her extremist views. And she's also shown herself willing to mold her views, as she did to be part of the Reagan administration. Her views moved to the right at that time, so I certainly don't trust her.
Let me go back to Mab Segres for a minute. You have, in terms of foreign policy, you're writing a book on globalization. The U.S. has very much isolated Cuba, and the Helms-Burton Act is well known in relation to Cuba. What about Jesse Helms and our neighbor to the south?
Well, I'm sure the Cubans are celebrating today. I mean, Jesse couldn't do it, though, by himself, of course, but he certainly, that embargo has caused a huge amount of pain and suffering for the people of Cuba, and just as his regressive foreign policy has in many places. So, you know, I think that it's also dangerous to view him as kind of a dinosaur or a throwback, because, as you point out, there are other folks who are coming in his place. There's like this compassionate conservative thing, which he never did, never wanted to do. It's not his cast, but all of those politics are certainly around, and in the Bush administration getting recast rapidly in the absence of a communist threat, we still can worry about it and shape our policy around it. So,
right now, what are your plans for the seat? A lot of people will be starting to come forward. What about grassroots organizing and whether you're going to be focusing on electoral politics? Do you see this as a real opportunity?
Well, I'd like to make clear that I'm not running. But really strong grassroots campaigns around Harvey Gantt's candidacy. Elaine Marshall was the main declared candidate now, and all those folks who got activated against Helms, I mean, that's been the good part of his legacy here, and I think other places too. He was so bad on so many things, articulating the links so clearly, that people saw their need to work together and figure out another way to explain all of that. And there is that left in North Carolina, and I hope that there will be those grassroots components. I hope that the party and the candidates honor them and call on them, which hasn't always been the case.
We just heard Patricia Ireland refer to this news piece, the state legislator Donald Davis, the white Republican who sent around this email, "Two things made this country great, white men and Christianity." Who is he?
You know, I'm not even sure. He's one of the legislators. It's part of the problem.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. We've been joined by Mab Segres, who currently is writing a book on globalization, but is founding director of North Carolinians Against Racist and Religious Violence. And Patricia Ireland, former president of the National Organization for Women. What are you doing now?
I'm here in Miami, actually, and I'm doing consulting work in Washington. But I, of course, wanted to note that we just lost the Latin Grammys because of the Cuban protests here, so there's certainly strong emotions around that embargo still to this day.
Well, thank you very much both for being with us. You're listening to Democracy Now! When we come back, we're going to get response from Sally Booker about Jesse Helms and foreign policy, particularly as it relates to Africa. He'll also be talking about a new statement that they've just released on the UN Conference on Racism, and we'll be covering that conference in Durban extensively. Then we're going to go to the latest expose on the U.S. role in the Rwandan genocide. You're listening to Democracy Now! Breaking the Sound Barrier. Stay with us.
You might still
Pickett, don't you ever let nobody drag your spirit down from Say Yo Business, a live recording by Linda Tillery and the Cultural Heritage Choir. Here on Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers, and a special good morning to KZYX and Z, who are running us live today, as well as WEOS in Geneva, New York, and WMNF in Tampa. A special hello to KPFA listeners in Berkeley, as well as KGNU listeners in Boulder, Denver, and so many other stations around the country, and to you listening at WBIX.org. It's great to be with you, and let your friends know it'll be running throughout the day on that address.